I'm Katie Clark. This is The World. The scare over tainted food products continues in China. Today, Chinese authorities vowed to investigate how eggs are being contaminated with melamine. That's the same chemical involved in the recent scandal over Chinese milk. More than 50,000 children became ill and 4 infants died after ingesting tainted milk products. These cases in China are not the first food safety scandals in history, and they won't be the last, according to British food journalist Bea Wilson. She says that when it comes to people deliberately messing with our food, history seems to repeat itself. Wilson has a new book called Swindled: The Dark History of Food Fraud, from poisoned candy to counterfeit coffee. She says neither example in the title is fictional. Take the candy.
We think of candy now as being a worrying substance because of all the additives and food colourings in it. But you really wouldn't want to have had children's candies in the 19th century when they would be coloured with lead derivatives, copper derivatives, which are actual poisons.
Wilson isn't saying that food today is deliberately poisoned, but she does say that many of the food choices available to us in an average American supermarket aren't as great as they might seem.
I think a huge amount of what's for sale in supermarkets doesn't really count as food at all. I think if you know how to cook and you're cooking from basic raw ingredients, then you have got pretty good choices available now compared to in the past. But it's just the people who don't cook that I worry about, because almost everything they're putting in their basket is falsified in some way, is deceptive, is possibly not going to be very good for their health in either the short term or the long term.
Isn't it actually cheaper for us? I mean, food is fairly reasonably priced.
It's fairly reasonably priced. But if you look at these kind of fake foods, I mean, the classic old example would be margarine versus butter. Obviously, that's got more complicated in recent years because margarine is sometimes sold at a premium, sort of pretending it's got all these health benefits. But the people who fought against margarine in the 19th century, saying it's a fake food, pointed out that one of the bad things about it is it actually cost almost nothing to produce compared to butter. But the price of it would always be just below the price of butter, when in fact it ought to be kind of half the price of butter or a quarter the price of butter. And I would say the same about so many of the so-called cheap foods, the fake cheese analog snacks, the fromage frais and yogurts, which are really just made with all these padders and fillers and sweeteners. They seem cheap. Yeah, exactly. They seem cheap, but they're not really, because so much of it is based on the idea that it's an approximation of real yogurt or real cheese. And it's not. It's probably cost the manufacturers almost nothing to make it. And they're therefore swindling us.
Okay, B, let's go shopping, shall we?
Great.
Shelly Fiat order 8 is ready for pickup at your convenience. Thank you.
Now, these are probably not the most beautiful example of roasted chicken, but one would think roasted chicken is a healthy choice. What is it, B?
Not as healthy as you'd hope. I mean, yeah, a lot of people choose it thinking, well, it's white meat, and let's have a look at this. The basic fat content of chicken has been transformed since the 1970s. So in the 1970s, there would be a lot more protein than fat in a chicken. That's what you'd expect, right?
I mean,
you think it's high protein, low fat. There used to be 8 grams of fat per 100 grams in a chicken. There's now 22 grams.
What did they do to them?
What didn't they do to them? They kind of kept them in horrible darkened sheds and fed them a bad diet and didn't let them get out and flap their wings and exercise their legs. And this is the result. And it's been described as kind of, by one British scientist, he described it as a pathological infiltration of fat. And it's kind of adulteration from within, because whatever you do to it, it's still not going to be a good food.
So, B, here we are standing before a dizzying array of breads. We have whole wheat, Canadian brown, raisin, light-seeded rye.
By my definition, most of what we're looking at isn't bread at all.
Well, give it a try.
Let's have a look. So I'm not going to go for the really kind of obviously bad ones, like the kind of sliced white, which you'd expect to come with lots of bleaches and things. Let's go for one that kind of looks a bit healthier. Like this one says 100% whole wheat bread. And it's sliced and it's in a packet, and you'd think you were kind of doing quite well by choosing that, wouldn't you?
But I have a sneaky feeling we're going to find out otherwise.
Bread only needs flour, water, salt and yeast, or another raising agent. And this one has got dough conditioners, mono and diglycerides, ethoxylated mono and diglycerides, sugar, yeast, nutrients, monocalcium and phosphate, ammonium sulfate, calcium propionate, preservative, and finally soy lecithin. So really, what looked like such a nice choice to start with turns out to be not that different from the kind of hot dog buns over there.
But, you know, you get to buy a loaf of bread to feed your family for $3.19 as opposed to $7 or $8 for a loaf of really healthy artisan-made bread.
That's the trouble, and it shouldn't be like that. I mean, the artisan-made bread, if they were able to sell enough of it, then the prices would come down. But it's a pretty bad predicament we're in here with bread.
British food writer Bea Wilson walking the aisles of a supermarket in Providence, Rhode Island. Wilson says some of the blame for what she sees as a crisis of food fraud can be laid at the door of globalization.
Swindling is something that's happened for centuries. It goes all the way back to the ancient Romans. But it only becomes a truly endemic, terrifying problem in post-industrial societies. And when you have it happens when you have these long, long food chains between the producer and the consumer, when the consumer ultimately has no idea who the person was who made the food that they're about to put in their mouths. And if you add a globalised economy into this, the chain gets that much longer and the opportunities for tampering with food are so much greater.
You have farmers in Kenya, for instance, selling their green beans to markets in Europe and wherever. What is the effect in the developing world when it comes to this sort of thing?
Some terrible things are happening in the developing world. It's been said that the most adulterated food in the whole of Asia is sold in the markets of Dhaka in Bangladesh, where it's just rife, where adulteration is the rule rather than the exception. And on the other hand, at the opposite end of the scale, I mean, you have, you know, lots of the developing world, unlike us, is still agricultural. So the big problem is hunger and people not having enough food. But when they do have food, they do still generally know what goes in a loaf of bread because they are making it themselves. So I think you have kind of two ends of the spectrum in the developing world. In the fast industrializing bits of the developing world, probably much worse problems than we've got. And in the sort of subsistence economies, well, adulteration is the least of their worries. You know, they're just trying to get enough to eat.
Bea Wilson writes a weekly food column for London's Sunday Telegraph. Her book is called Swindled, The Dark History of Food Fraud, From Poisoned Candy to Counterfeit Coffee. Thank you so much.
Thank you.